Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Howard Pincus from the Federal Public Defender, and I represent Free Ritchie.
The counsel, I hate to interrupt as you're getting ready to swing into your argument, but this, you have two arguments, both of which I believe you agree are under plain error. Is that correct?
Well, the other one, you gave up
on one, so we only have, I'm just asking.
Oh, in this case.
Yeah, you're operating under plain error.
Correct, Your Honor.
I'd like for you to address, under the plain error standard, if we have three circuits that agree with you, and we have two circuits and one other case that's out there that hasn't been decided that disagree with you, how can the error be plain?
Well, and in fairness, now there are three, even Henderson in the Eighth Circuit, which changed what other people thought was the holding of the Eighth Circuit previously in Sanchez-Garcia. So there is a more even split, but a circuit split doesn't preclude a finding of plain error, this court held in Story. In this case, this court has held errors plain despite contrary authority in other circuits. It did so in a Hidley. It did so in Overholt, which is 307 F3rd 1231, which is cited in a Hidley. And it did so in McCarr. If the error is clear enough, and it certainly is here, then this court can find it to be plain, despite what other circuits have held. Well, that they made an error doesn't bind this court to make the same error.
You've answered my question. I just wanted to jump in to see where you were in regards to that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. The district court treated Mr. Ritchie as a career offender based on two Oklahoma drug convictions that are overbroad because they reach substances that do not meet the uniform federal definition of controlled substance. Because this error was plain, as I just explained, this court should vacate Mr. Ritchie's sentence and remand for resentencing. The general presumption expressed in 1943 in Jerome versus United States is that federal provisions use federal standards and do not depend on state law. Guideline terms likewise have uniform federal meanings. For the Sentencing Commission to treat controlled substance in 4B1.2B differently and make it be anything a particular state says it is, the commission would have to do so in clear terms.
And let me interrupt for just a minute. You talked about Henderson. Didn't Henderson just reject your Jerome argument and basically said, yeah, that presumption applies unless Congress clearly indicates to depart from that presumption? And the argument is here, it would have been very easy for Congress to cross-reference the Federal Controlled Substances List Act so that it was very clear that that's what applied here, and it didn't do it, and that therefore must not have intended, in fact, that used to cross-reference, and it doesn't anymore.
Well, starting with the second part of that, when the commission first established this guideline, it identified offenses under the Federal Controlled Substance Act. The amendment 268, which changed it to the current language, said, we're just clarifying. It didn't say that there was any big change that now allowed state definitions of controlled substance to be controlling. And the critical point
But the fact is they left that language out. That seems really significant to me.
Well, but they said, we're only clarifying. And really the important thing
is... Now we can get into the question of what does clarifying mean, you know?
But what's really critical here is the background presumption that we start with. Under Jerome and under how guideline terms are ordinarily given a uniform federal definition. And with that background presumption, if the commission wants to change it to make a term depend on state law, it needs to say so in clear terms. And there's nothing clear in the guideline that says this. The guideline text doesn't have anything that modifies controlled substance. If under federal or state law in 4B1.2B did, that would make clear that anything a state regulate qualifies as a controlled substance. Instead, that phrase appears 21 words earlier and modifies offense. What this shows is that state convictions can be used, but it doesn't show what qualifies as a controlled substance. And that's really the critical issue here. And that's why the Second Circuit in Townsend said that the approach of looking at the guidelines straight up and seeing without consideration of the presumption has it backwards. What we need is some clear basis in the guideline to say, look at state law when ordinarily we look to a uniform federal definition. And there's nothing in 4B2.1B that is that clear or plain indication. That's why in Townsend, the Second Circuit concluded that federal law and the Federal Controlled Substance Act in specifically has to be the interpretive anchor for controlled substance. As it explained there, if the Sentencing Commission wanted controlled substance to include substances controlled under only state law to qualify, then it should have said so. And it didn't say so. And that's why this is why the guideline clearly requires a federal definition. And under the Federal Controlled Substance Act, neither of Mr. Ritchie's his 2009 or 2015 Oklahoma drug convictions qualified. Oklahoma in those years criminalized acts involving TFMPP and Salvia divinorum, which are not included in the Federal Controlled Substance Act. The result here is clear. As the Second Circuit said in Townsend, it's confident that its result is the right one. And the circuits that have held to the contrary make several mistakes. They read under federal or state law as if it modifies controlled substance rather than offense. They also look to what the guidelines do not say rather than for affirmative proof of an intent to rely on state law, which is absent here. They also say they're using the ordinary definition or ordinary meaning of controlled substance, but the problem is that there's no such meaning that's independent of state law. As the Ninth Circuit said in Leal Vega, what is a controlled substance must of necessity be tethered to some local, state, or federal law that controls. Saying that it's regulated simply begs the question of by whom. The other circuits also rely on authority giving ordinary meaning to counterfeit substance. But that's very different because counterfeit has a uniform meaning that does not depend on state law. And that's simply not the case with control, which requires it to be controlled by some jurisdiction.
But part of the analysis in United States versus Thomas relied pretty heavily on the fact that there was no cross-reference, and yet there were cross-references on other portions.
Well, Thomas first said that the proposed definition of counterfeit substance there would have been unnecessary because under that definition, it was already a controlled substance. It was trying to give independent meaning to or counterfeit substance. And it stressed the or part of that phrase to say it has to be something in addition to controlled substance, because otherwise controlled substance covers the field. It talked about how, with respect to counterfeit substance in particular, there was a cross-reference in another guideline, but not in the guideline under consideration. We don't have anything like that here.
So and help in fact, me recall, this, in Thomas, when we're talking about the counterfeit drug, how was it ultimately defined? By generic terms?
By an ordinary meaning, which does have a meaning independent of state law.
And it wasn't that term is the specific term counterfeit, right?
Correct.
But didn't counterfeit apply to controlled substance?
Well, there's controlled substance or counterfeit substance. So this court was trying to get at what is or counterfeit substance in 4B1.2B. And when it said that there was a reference to the Controlled Substance Act elsewhere, it only gave that as an additional reason for its holding. Its primary reason was for adopting the reason that the definition it did was to give independent content to or counterfeit substance. And it could do that in a way that didn't depend on the vagaries of state law. This court in Thomas wasn't choosing between a definition under federal law and one that varied by states. It was choosing between one federal uniform definition and another. This case is very different because here the choice is between a uniform federal definition and one that depends on how anything a state chooses to control in its regulations. And that can be very significant. As Chief Judge Gregory said in dissent in Board, Virginia categorizes at least 52 substances as controlled substances that are not found in the Federal Controlled Substance Act. So the interest in having a uniform approach under federal law is what's paramount here, and it requires a federal definition, one that is divorced from what each state chooses to regulate, that state offenses can then be matched up against. We said in the brief that the commission did not change the definition of Controlled Substance Act, even after circuit decisions that held that a controlled substance means one under the Controlled Substance Act. We noted there that the first case was the Eighth Circuit's decision in Sanchez-Garcia in 2011. As the court's aware from the 28J letters and its questioning, the Eighth Circuit in Henderson said, no, we really didn't hold that there. We just assumed it based on what was argued. But courts like the Ninth Circuit in Leal Vega considered it to be a holding, and the commission was likely to. So the point remains the same. The failure of the commission to act from 2011 until it lacked a quorum in 2018 is also proof that they didn't have an issue with it being with the definition of controlled substance being what's regulated under the Federal Controlled Substance Act. The government does not dispute that if the error here was plain, the remaining prongs of the plain error test were met. Without treating the 2009 and 2015 convictions as controlled substance offenses, Mr. Ritchie's guideline was only 37 to 46 months rather than 360 to life. This court should vacate his sentence and remand for resentencing without the use of the career offender designation and without treating those convictions as controlled substance offenses. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McGarry.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Wilson McGarry, and I represent the United States in this case. This court should affirm the district court and find that it did not plainly err in determining Mr. Ritchie's two prior Oklahoma State drug convictions applied for purposes of the career offender enhancement under 4B1.1. The focus here is clearly what the definition of controlled substance offense. And as this court already kind of jumped into is the Thomas decision. And I think that we have the benefit of the Thomas decision to guide the court in its analysis when it analyzed the definition of a counterfeit substance under 4B1.2B.
Isn't Mr. Pink is correct that, the definition of counterfeit, you go to a dictionary and find the meaning. With the definition of controlled substance is absolutely dependent upon who controls the substance. The definition of a controlled substance is in the state, each state is different than a controlled substance under federal law. So the Thomas analysis doesn't really apply very well here, does it?
I think that it does. And I think that in Thomas, you know, the court was offered essentially two proposed definitions. And in this case, I believe that the court can adopt a very, you know, ordinary meaning definition of controlled substance.
What is that ordinary meaning? Where would we find that?
Well, I think, first, you know, the dictionary is a good place, but the court in Ruth provided that, citing to that, the Random House Dictionary provided, I think, a very, ordinary, plain, everyday meaning of the term controlled substance, which is any category of behavior altering or addictive drugs, such as heroin, cocaine, whose possession and use are restricted by law.
But that just begs the question, restricted by law. We're still left with the legal question of whose law.
Right. And I think looking at the plain text here, you can determine that it's under federal or state law, as the text says. Appellant here is offering a very specialized definition and limiting it to simply the federal definition. However, the plain meaning and just simply, you know, looking at the text and history of the of the provision here, I think this court can see, that the commission's intent to define it under federal and or link it to federal and state law is clear. And as Judge McHugh, I believe you referenced earlier, the fact that there is no cross-reference is very important in this case. And that's something that the Thomas case emphasized, especially in light of the fact that the commission and the guidelines reference other statutory provisions, including, one immediately preceding the text that we're discussing under 4B1.2A2, the guideline references, makes a statutory reference there. And again, the historical, context here with the amendment of the language, I believe in 1989, and actually removing the reference to the Controlled Substance Act, I believe is very, very strong evidence in this case of the commission's intent to include a reference beyond simply a federal definition or Federal Controlled Substances Act.
Well, you would admit that that would be a change that was much more than simply clarifying how it used to be when it made a specific cross-reference, wouldn't you?
It's interesting because in Thomas, there's actually a line in there that says with the actual cross-reference, it being in there, that this court found that the language was still a bit unclear. I think here you can see by that reference that the commission is showing its intent by making that adjustment, an attempt to clarify the language here so as not to limit it simply to a federal definition. Or
when we look at any commentary or any notes that follow this particular guideline, are we tipped off as to what kind of offenses we are to look at?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, off the top of my head, looking
in
here.
In fact, all the offenses listed are federal, aren't they?
The offenses listed in the commentary?
Yes.
That's true, Your Honor. However, the commission is not simply limited here.
That help us to interpret what they meant in the text by looking at the examples?
I believe so, but those are simply examples and not exhaustive lists. And I think the revision of the text is the most telling of its intent in order to remove any type of limitation that might be beset by the Controlled Substances Act.
Mr. McGarry, I'm going to ask you to pause, and Kevin, I also pause the clock. I think we've lost Mr. Pincus from this hearing.
Yeah.
You're back.
Don't leave again.
I'm trying not to. We were just calling the court to say, I was hoping I wouldn't have to respond to something I hadn't heard. But
yeah, so that's, when we noticed you're gone, we stopped the argument. So,
thank you. I appreciate that. And sorry for the technical glitches. I don't know what's going on.
Sadly, I can't help you.
We have the gentleman here who can, and he was able to get us back in.
I won't leave the room from now on.
Okay, great. Okay, Mr. McGarry, are you ready to proceed?
As best as I can, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I think just in case Mr. Pincus missed this, I think we were talking about Judge Briscoe noted that the comments to the provision cite only federal crimes. And I think that's where we were. Was your response to that?
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe, you know, that's a commentary and examples. However, I don't believe that's an exhaustive list. And, you know, I think the plain language of the definition in text here with the disjunctive under federal or state law is instructive on that, probably not necessary for the commission to simply list every controlled substance. And if they intended that to be an exhaustive list, I think they would have done so elsewhere other than.
Well, but one would think that if they were making any examples, which they did, that they would include a state controlled substance violation. That way we would know where they're headed when they talk about controlled substance.
Well, I see your point, Your Honor, but I think they made it clear by including the actual disjunctive federal or state law. That text is right there. And, perhaps.
Well, it's pretty hard to keep using the word clear when we have pretty much a circuit split on what this language means. But I'm sure you will persist in calling it clear. It is not clear to me.
Yes, Your Honor. And
what else could it mean, counsel, to you?
What else could?
It clearly says, using your word, federal or state law. Okay, what would be an example that you would say this state law, because the list that refers to the federal would read out in clearly in the state, using your word again, state law. So give me an example of why state law is not included in that list and why.
Well, I can, you know, that's hypothetically, I'm not sure why the Sentence Commission, but for instance, had we adopt Mr. Ritchie's reading of it, for instance, like methamphetamine in Oklahoma, based on the categorical approach, because Oklahoma includes three extra substances on its list, would just not even be considered for the enhancement, where in another state, it that matched categorically the Controlled Substances Act would. So I think the impact is clear from what Mr. Ritchie is arguing here, and would counter, he raised the issue of the Jerome presumption, would actually, while it is just a presumption that could be overcome by the clear or the plain indication otherwise, which in this case I'd argue is the disjunctive of under federal or state law.
let me push you a little bit on that, because they could have made it clear by saying the term controlled substance offense means an offense under federal or state law punishable by imprisonment exceeding the year, blah, 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 or dispensing of a controlled or counterfeit substance under state or federal law. And they don't say that. So, yes, they say state or federal law, but when they get down to controlled substance, it doesn't say a controlled substance under state or federal law. Should that affect our interpretation of this provision?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think this court previously addressed in, the Abdel-Jawad case. And I think when you look at the term controlled, this court said it is, you know, it has to be tethered to some state, federal, or local law. And so I think just by the plain ordinary meaning of controlled, it would essentially include that and avoid the redundancy of including under federal or state law twice in its own definition. So do I need to pause? Sorry.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Don't leave the screen.
Oh, yes.
Poor Nick.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yeah. I'm here.
Stay put.
I've been here.
So I'll continue. I'm sorry. So, anyways, I think this court can look at Thomas just in the same way that the Fourth Circuit in Ward looked to Mills, and that the Seventh Circuit in Ruth looked to Hudson, which both addressed the counterfeit substances definition. So I think this court has the benefit of having at least some guide rails in this case, and then can proceed to look at simply the ordinary meaning of the text here. Without anything further,
if you would pick one of the circuits that goes in your direction, which is the strongest opinion?
You know, I really liked the Ward decision. I thought did a good job of textually breaking down the definition here.
Okay, thank you.
If there's nothing further, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you. And Mr. Pincus, you have a minute 54.
Well, I think that the previous discussion showed that, you know, there's arguments being made for and against, but what is evident is that there is no clear indication, and there easily could have been, and that's what's dispositive here.
I guess we're going to end with the question we started with, which is we're under a clear error standard here. And so if it isn't clear, I mean, don't you lose?
Well, if the question were without any background presumptions, without Jerome, without how guideline terms are typically interpreted, if we had to choose a side without some, we're forced to choose and there were competing arguments on both sides, then maybe. Okay. But that's not what we have here. We have the presumption that federal terms are given federal meaning.
Counsel, wait a minute. You've got a federal statute, or you've got a statute that says federal or state, and we're arguing that the state, that doesn't mean anything here.
Well, we're not arguing it doesn't mean anything. It modifies offense. It means a state conviction can operate, can be used. What matters is, what is a controlled substance? Regulated by whom? You can't transport under federal or state law 21 words forward to have it modify something different. And because you can't, and because there's no clear indication, the background presumptions control here. They make it clear that the commission did not intend to make the drastic change of making a definition depend solely on the vagaries of state law. That's That's what dictates the correct construction of 4B1.2B, and it's also what shows the error here to be plain. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take this matter under advisement.